Hey, Real Talk podcast listeners, a one-on-one with Grand Prairie Mayor Jackie Clayton coming up in this episode. Can her city spend less and get safer? All eyes on GP as that Northern Alberta city bids adieu to the RCMP, welcoming its own municipal police service. In fact, it's the first Alberta city since Camrose way back in 1956 to introduce a new police service. And so that means that both proponents and critics of Danielle Smith's plan to establish a provincial police force are going to be paying very close attention to how this transition plays out. We don't just talk policing. We'll talk about municipal political parties, an announcement coming this week on that. Homeless encampments, skyrocketing utilities, the future of hydrogen, that idea of Red Deer as a city of a million people. Really? And the mayor's hesitation around so-called 15-minute cities. I promise you won't be bored.
This is a Relay Project. Real Talk starts right now. Here's Ryan Jesperson.
I want to welcome you to this episode of Real Talk, a cool opportunity in just a second to go one-on-one with an outspoken, prominent, sharp, ambitious, articulate Alberta mayor who doesn't always get the headlines because she's not the mayor of one of the two cities with a million people or more. But Jackie Clayton wants to have Grand Prairie all over your radar. She's in Alberta's capital city today, the day we're doing this show, because she's going to be meeting with the Chambers of Commerce. She's going to be talking to decision makers at the airlines. She wants more action in their region. We're going to talk about the approach that Grand Prairie is taking to policing. They've just sworn in a new police chief, the city moving away from the RCMP. A lot of people are paying attention to that. Plus, what are the impacts of things like Bill 18? What does she expect the impact will be? How much dealing has Grand Prairie done directly with the federal government anyway? We'll talk about encampments and the approach that GP, as they call it, is taking to housing, homelessness, and mental health. Plus, we'll get to your questions in our YouTube live chat. We're grateful that you're here. Her Worship, Mayor Clayton, in just a moment. But first, there's something new going on at Rello that we want to tell you about. You know, this is Alberta's top real estate school. This is where the movers and shakers in Alberta's real estate scene are getting schooled up. And there's a special discount for you right now, exclusively for Real Talk audience members. It's going to get you a $100 discount on the Alberta Residential Real Estate Bundle and the Alberta Commercial Real Estate Bundle. The promo code Ryan100. Wherever you can see your career in real estate going, this is the perfect way to start. They've got experienced instructors. They've got a ton of online resources, pre-licensing courses for you to check out. And then once you've launched, once you're helping people or businesses find their perfect place, the supports are still there from the experts at Rello. Again, that promo code is Ryan100. Knock $100 off your real estate bundle, residential or commercial, as you get your career started today. That's Ryan100 at Rello.ca. Well, she's been mayor for a little bit more than this term. Your term as mayor in Grand Prairie started a little early when an executive from the town departed, moved on. Long story. We won't get in the weeds on it, but a longtime counselor before that. She's been a player in Grand Prairie's municipal political scene for about a decade, and she's our guest this morning in studio, Mayor Jackie Clayton. It's nice to see you. Thanks for making time for us.
You as well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you rolled into the capital city like right around midnight. You made Real Talk your first stop. You're going to be meeting with airline execs. You're going to be talking to business leaders today in Edmonton. How frequently does this happen? You make the trip down south to Edmonton to plant a whole bunch of seeds.
Absolutely. It's on a regular basis. We had a council meeting last night. It ended a little later than expected. So hit the road, got here, here in part for the Hydrogen Conference and to represent our region, but also in addition to have meetings with advocacy priorities, and one of them being this week, WestJet, and speaking with EIA and the Chamber of Commerce, finding some opportunities for more flights to the region. Right now, between two airlines, we get about 7 flights a day, which is less than we were prior to COVID. And
that sounds like a lot to me, 7 flights a day.
Yeah, it's not really. I mean, they're all maxed and the prices are high again. There's lots of opportunity for growth. At one point prior to COVID, we were 9 flights a day. At the peak, we were at 11 flights a day. So we're very fortunate to be serviced by both airlines. We're one of the few mid-sized cities in Alberta that is. So I won't complain complain about their service per se. It just needs more.
Grand Prairie, about 70,000 people.
Yeah.
So on these flights, obviously, there's like families that are on the way down to the hubs. They're going to fly out on vacation and stuff like that. But what portion would you say of those flights? I mean, off the top of what you know, what portion are people flying in for work in the region? Is it like 75%?
I wouldn't say it's that high, but definitely you've noticed it lately. The conversations are more about people flying in. Partially, that's because of a lack of rental opportunities in our municipality right now. And so I think that it's probably a lot of people flying to Calgary for business. We only have one flight a day to Edmonton, which is a real problem. So other than that one flight, I got to fly through Calgary, which makes it a 3.5 hour trip as opposed to a 4.5 hour for a drive. So that's a problem. And so the airlines compete directly with the highway. And so, but that's all about the timing of the airlines. And so advocating for better scheduling, more frequency, that's definitely a priority.
People think of Grand Prairie, they think of the energy industry, obviously, for people. Before we start getting it, I'm looking forward to spending a decent amount of time today picking your brain, learning a little bit more about the region. But what is the story of Grand Prairie? Like, what's driving the economy right now? What's driven it in past? What are some of the real opportunities you see there, and what are some of the real challenges that your city's facing?
Yeah, we're very fortunate in our region to be home to many industries and many sectors. So the largest natural gas play in North America, the Montney and the Duvernay, is in our backyard. 51% of all forestry activity happens in that region. Agriculture, we're the service hub. We service over 300,000 people, whether it's health services, professional services, retail services. So really to have that sort of four bucket sector support is something that makes us grow. We have we support areas like northeastern BC as well as northern Alberta, and really that hub in northern Alberta.
Yeah, it's kind of Grand Prairie and Fort McMurray are kind of like across, you know, when people think of like the bigger centers in northern Alberta, those are kind of the two that
people bigger,
think of,
but yeah. Grand Prairie would really service a broader scope of people. Fort McMurray servicing really what's directly adjacent, and Grand Prairie servicing significantly large area.
Is there a change in your body posture? Is there kind of a rivalry between GP and Fort Mac?
No, I think that the reality is Grand Prairie is more diverse in the sectors that it services and the offerings. Fort McMurray serves, you know, highly energy, oil and gas, and so we definitely are more of a service area.
Okay, you guys became, I guess, just what about 4 days ago, the first city in Alberta since 1956 to swear in a new police service. Camrose was the last in 1956, hard to believe. Is it Daryl LaCosta? This is your
Dwayne.
Dwayne LaCosta, pardon me. Your new chief. The RCMP continued to patrol the streets, continue to operate now, but they're on the clock, essentially. The city's given notice, and you'll be transitioning to the Grand Prairie Police Service within, what, about a year?
No, it's a five-year transition.
Okay.
So last March, council approved the transition. The police chief started in August of last year. He's hired his six senior leaders right now. They're starting to train inexperienced officers in conjunction with University of Lethbridge and Northwest Polytechnic, working with EPS and getting programs implemented for training, recruiting new recruits right now and experienced recruits. By the end of 2024, there will be 40 boots in the street. Last week, they unveiled the first police cars, the uniforms, etc. So very traditional municipal looking uniforms, blue like Edmonton and similar to Calgary. Really that transition is over 5 years with the de-escalation of RCMP and the increase of GPPS. Right now we're having great success from recruits, which is always a concern and was a community concern as well, because we know the RCMP is having significant problems recruiting. And so for example, with the new recruits, there was about 20 that the chief was looking to hire, and they had almost 200 applicants. And so people are looking to get in at the grassroots level, and we're very fortunate with the team that Chief LaCosta was able to build. Himself being a 25-year member, EPS, worked on ALERT, worked in human trafficking, worked for the province and the Ministry of Public Safety, was able to recruit very experienced leaders. And so that transition over the next few years is really a duplication of services at some point. The province supported our transition with $9.7 million, and the significant portion of that transition is because of that duplication of services.
So you obviously, you approached the province. What was the timeline when you, was this Premier Kenny? Was this Premier Smith?
So it would have started back in about, so the conversation started last council in around 2019, 2018, when Red Deer
started
to- So
Premier Notley even.
Yeah, so when Red Deer started to explore municipal service review, policing service review, we paid attention. And at that time, Red Deer's report came back. There was opportunities for better service, for a different service. But at that time, the RCMP was quite affordable. And so Red Deer decided they weren't interested in furthering that conversation. We decided, you know, we paid attention what was happening. Then Premier Kenny spoke about provincial police service, and so we paid attention and talked about what would happen if the province were to transition to provincial police service, and a municipality such as ours was exploring a municipal police service, would we be able to grandfather in if we had transitioned? The province at the time said, yeah, absolutely. If you're a municipal police service, we're not going to end that service by implementing provincial police service. So in 2020, council started to have conversations about funding a service review. 2021, the service review came back, 110-page report that took a broad sweep across Canada of services and where opportunities could be found. For many years, our municipality continued to put more money at RCMP. We were above the crime severity index provincially as well as federally. We would put more money into it, more administration, and we weren't seeing necessarily better outcomes. We were seeing better statistics, but the community didn't necessarily feel safer. And so with the service review, it showed that there was significant opportunities. With that, council following that funded a transition review and report, and MMP was hired as a third-party independent contractor to put forward a transition plan. That plan came back. Council endorsed it in March of last year.
Everybody's kind of paying attention to Surrey, BC, and Grand Prairie. I mean, these are two of the, I think, probably the most prominent examples of Canadian cities, of municipalities. Obviously, different challenges, different populations, etc., but that are moving on from the RCMP. So just as a civilian, I'm listening to you, it's basically like the RCMP is getting too expensive. Municipalities obviously are on the hook for paying for it for the most part, and you're not seeing the outcomes. You're not getting bang for your buck. Like that was basically
And reality is that when the RCMP had a contract negotiation and municipalities were handed retroactive pay bills, and they were, you know, last week we heard about the 8% increase. Those were all factors. Ideally, it's about it's about safety service, right? You want to have the safest community as possible. In the Surrey conversation, there was a lot of political decisions made prior to a service review and a transition plan. We did a lot of back work prior to making a political decision. And so multiple years of conversation and reviews and plans before the elected officials made a decision. And I think something to remind people is that only 20% of Canada is policed by RCMP. 80% of Canadians are policed by a service other than the RCMP. And we know that 2034 is the end of the current contract policing agreement. We wanted to be in front of that. Western Canada is a little bit behind on this transition. The federal government has said for a while they may not be interested in contract policing. So you add all those pieces together. Council was very interested in exploring that. End of the day, the council meeting went past midnight that night, a long day of decision-making, a long day of presentations, very contentious issue. The unknown is always scary, and there's a significant emotional attachment to the RCMP.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that. I remember it was March 9th of last year, you and your colleague on council, Dylan Bressy, joined me on the show. I'm sure you remember this.
Yeah.
A decision had recently been made, and we were talking about it. You'd received that $9.something million from the province to make this happen. And I remember, you know, Bressy and I, are, you know, we're buds. And so, you know, when we text each other, when he shoots me a note, it's like, you know, he says what he thinks, and he did not appreciate how I framed it.
Right.
Right. Because we put up a thumbnail promoting it. And it was like, no more RCMP. Yeah. And he really kind of took exception to that.
For sure. And this isn't an anti-RCMP.
And that's what
decision.
He wanted to make clear. He was like, hey, man, we don't want this portrayed like it's some sort of a swipe on the RCMP.
No.
How has it? I mean, I know, but you told us, and people can go back in our archives, that's March 9th of 2023 when you get into more detail on this. But I remember you telling us that you did have polling that showed that the move was landing in pretty popular fashion with your population. But what have you heard since? I mean, are people sort of having, you know, buyer's remorse in a sense?
No, and I actually think it's the other way. Initially, it was such a contentious conversation and people were really afraid of that transition. Now they're learning more about it. It really they're meeting the police chief. He's an incredible person, willing to go to a Rotary meeting, willing to sit down with, you know, people that talk about specific issues, talk about opioid overdoses, talk about homelessness and mental health supports that are needing. And our chief is truly invested in our community. We're very fortunate to have someone who's so proactive and truly excited about this. But I think that the community is getting to learn more. There's still naysayers for sure. And I think that people, and they're sitting to watch, like you said, the country's watching. I know other mid-sized cities across Alberta are watching. The provincial government has put forward a opportunity for financial support for municipalities that are willing to explore this transition, because 2034, A, is coming quickly, and B, every municipal leader in this province wants to provide the safest community possible.
I don't know. I'm assuming that the mayor is not like hiring police officers, but I am curious for what information you've been provided on to what extent existing RCMP members working in Grand Prairie or applying for the new jobs with the Grand Prairie Police and the like. By the way, people can check out the website, gppolice.com. You can check out the job listings and everything else, learn a little bit more about how this is all going to play out. But is it a bunch of RCMP members that are coming over to work?
Well, there's a combination right now of new recruits and experienced recruits. So those experienced recruits are coming from other police services, Edmonton, Calgary, across Canada, because, you know, if you're a police member and you get in young, you can get to your 25-year relatively early and you still may want to explore an opportunity. And so being in at the grassroots has been an opportunity for members, but there's also a combination of new recruits. And so some of those RCMP, some of those new recruits, and really it's an opportunity for RCMP to extend their career if they want to, and new people to get into the enforcement world.
So this will still be seen or treated like any other police service in the province that's not RCMP, Calgary,
yep.
Edmonton, Lethbridge, Medicine Hat, Lacombe, Tabor. So, you know, there's an officer involved shooting or something, it's ACERT coming in, still the same, you know, it's still the same thing.
So we'll have drug enforcement, we'll have a police dog, the traditional sort of things, but there will be the ACERT, there still will be the involvement of public safety provincially as well as across Canada. I think people also need to recognize that this is a transition plan. We're starting to amp up, and it's an integration of service. So, for example, a mobile outreach team, which deals with people with acute needs that are maybe in the doorstep of a business or in a park, you call the mobile outreach. If you have a shoplifter at, say, Walmart, we're not going to be sending a police member, we're going to be sending a peace officer. And so there's a different approach. The integrated service model is something that's new, and we're really looking forward to seeing that integrated, that duplication of services with RCMP and GPPS will be for a few years, but we'll transition out of the RCMP. You'll start to see that late 2025.
Are the peace officers armed? I have no idea.
Yes.
Yeah. So what's the difference? Is it just the amount of training?
Yeah.
Do you have concerns about sending peace officers to do? I mean, I don't know, slight against peace officers. I don't know much about the difference, except for that they're not cops.
Yep.
Do you have concerns about involving them in
no.
law enforcement?
No, they're already doing that.
Okay.
So
you're kind of like, I don't know if you're an outlier. Do you consider yourself an outlier?
For sure.
Yeah. In Alberta municipalities that are currently policed by RCMP, it seems to me that the resounding chorus is that they do not want to see an Alberta Provincial Police Service replace the RCMP. Would you agree with my assessment?
I think that's fair. I mean, keeping
in mind.
So
why do you think you're so different?
Well, keep in mind that Edmonton and Calgary, you know, half of the province is policed by non-RCMP, right? So now,
at least.
And so then you add the other municipalities, ourselves, and like I said, Western Canada's behind on this transition. I think we're an outlier in the sense that we were willing to do this first. And, you know, other than the other municipalities, first to over 60 years. So the reality is people are paying attention. I know there are other municipalities in Alberta right now who are looking to do service reviews. And that's not because the RCMP aren't serving them well, but about finding the best use of your money. Public safety is the number one expense to municipalities. So do your due diligence, look at opportunities to create a safer feeling community, a safer community for the same price. And so this isn't about saving money, even though the MMP report showed that it'll cost the same or less. This is about creating a unique solution for unique problems with local oversight. And so a police commission has a monthly meeting that public can go and share their concerns. And really at the end of the day, the GPPS will be exactly that. Local oversight, local input, local solutions.
Do you get the sense that other mayors are going to be paying attention to how this plays out?
100%. And I sit on the Mid-Sized City Mayors Caucus, and we talk about it. My colleagues talk about it, ask on a regular basis how it's going. To date, the GPPS transition is on time, on budget. It's going well.
Bill 18, everybody's talking about it, the Provincial Priorities Act, Danielle Smith's Stay Out of My Backyard Act, as she's put it to the feds. I think people are familiar. If you're a regular tuner to this show, you know what it's all about. It's essentially Alberta saying that Ottawa's veering outside its lane when it comes to funding, and they want it to pass, my words, not the premier's, a sort of a provincial purity test. If there's going to be funding coming into Alberta for healthcare, housing, post-secondary, you name it, premier wants it across her desk. She wants the province to essentially endorse the funding as good for Alberta. What implications can you see this having in Grand Prairie?
Well, Bill 18, I see some pros and cons to it. You want to talk about housing, and so rapid housing dollars were recently handed out across the country and in the province. Ourselves, Red Deer, Lethbridge, Medicine Hat, Mid-Sized Cities weren't successful in those applications, and it tends to the conversation that it lends to the conversation that those were political decisions. If you were to look at the Minister of Housing federally, he gave significant dollars to Nova Scotia and to areas where there was potentially negative population growth. And when you look at areas across Alberta, when communities adjacent to the big cities receive funding, it makes you wonder if that was just to support the big cities. And with new jurisdictions being established in ridings across primarily Western Canada, does that lend to the fact that they're hoping to get more seats in those areas? And so when you look at mid-sized cities that weren't funded, we currently have approximately a 0% vacancy rate in our municipality. And so stepping in on those, I can see. Mental health and addictions, I have significant concern if the federal government were to come in and fund things that are in opposition to the provincial priorities. Right now, my municipality supports the transition plans and the recovery plans that the province has put forward. We are one of the communities that is being funded, that's going to receive a treatment center. Our municipality took a different approach to homelessness and housing. And I think, so to see the federal government step in and enforce or fund safe supply, what's contrary to the initiatives that the province puts in, isn't a good use of anybody's money, provincially or federally. So,
well, I guess it depends on your opinion on safe supply or harm reduction, right?
Sure, but, you know, the provincial government was elected on their mandate. And so to have another level of government interfere to be contrary to what that government was elected on doesn't seem appropriate use of dollars. And so, you know, to continue on safe supplies and keeping people on a hamster wheel is not something that we abide by and that we support in my municipality. We're aligned with the province's recovery transition plans and really recovery treatment.
I'll let people know that we talked to the federal housing minister, Sean Fraser, about this on April 18th. They can check out that episode in our YouTube or podcast archives. That just a few days ago. If you're just tuning in, live streaming the audio on the Mixlr audio app, presented by California Closets. We're talking to Grand Prairie Mayor Jackie Clayton. You and I obviously shoot straight when we talk, whether it's over beers or in front of microphones. You know, we talk about the political element of funding, and I think that everybody understands that to a certain degree, that's just how it works all the time. That's kind of a fact of politics. And in so many ways, as the federal government dropping big dollars in big cities, there are also political implications or ramifications based on where the province spends its money. You are in an ardently and consistently conservative city that typically votes in conservative governments, that perennially votes in conservative representatives anyway, I should say. So it kind of goes both ways on that front, right? Like, I mean, it's more in your best interest politically to align with where this provincial government is at, right?
Right, 100%. I think that our region continually aligns conservatively, and I think, though, that our region would have those conversations with the federal government as well. And I mean, I speak with, you know, Minister Boisseau on a regular basis, happy to come to funding announcements when we receive them. They don't tend to be in my region very often, and so advocate to the federal government on a regular basis, but really it's a few and far between announcements that we see in our area.
I want to, when we come back, talk to you, we're widely expecting on Thursday of this week, we're talking to Mayor Clayton on a Tuesday. I don't know when you're going to be listening to this or watching it. We sure appreciate that you are real talkers. So a couple of days from when Mayor Clayton and I are talking, We expect that the province will introduce legislation sort of paving the way for political parties at the municipal level. And I'm really looking forward to asking you about this. That's coming up in just a quick second. Before we get back to Mayor Clayton, I wanted to remind you that our friends at Friesen Brothers are now wide open at their 17th location. That is Friesen Brothers Glenora, the West End, a local reference. If you're anywhere near Edmonton, that's the 142nd Street, 107th Ave traffic circle, an absolutely beautiful location. I'm in love with what they've done with the butcher shop. I know I'm talking about that a lot, but they have dry age coolers. So you can go in there. What other food store can you walk in and get a 30 or 40 or 60 day aged ribeye? Let me quickly, nowhere else, only at Friesen Brothers. And that's just the start. They've also got their Mother's Day charcuterie box ready to go. You can totally customize it for mom, and you can learn more about that. Either visit them in store or check out cateringbyfriesen.com. Friesen Brothers is Alberta grown and Alberta owned. Talked a lot about emissions yesterday. How good was that? Hey, our conversation with Srijak Bhatnagar from Athabasca University. We talked to, if you missed it yesterday, Federal Minister Randy Boisneau as well about Pathways Alliance and what they're doing in carbon capture. Pathways Alliance is working with governments on a proposed carbon capture and storage network for Canada's oil sands. Why? Because global energy demands are changing. And that's why Canada's six largest oil sands companies are working together to offer the world responsibly produced oil. Pathways Alliance working with the provincial and federal government, building a large-scale carbon capture and storage network. The idea? To reduce emissions from operations, to protect existing jobs, and to create new jobs. Responsibly produced energy is what the world wants, and it is what Alberta can provide. You can learn more by visiting pathwaysalliance.ca. And along those lines of lessening our footprint, of doing what we can to move forward and meet the world where it's going when it comes to energy demand, our friends at Kubi Renewable Energy want to remind you that this is the time of year where those that have invested in solar are starting to really see the return on that investment. The days get longer, the sun shines longer, and folks that have thrown solar panels up on their homes or businesses or barns or office towers are recognizing those benefits. It also means that Kubi is ramping up those installs. The snow has melted. Their crews are up on the roofs, and they're hiring. Kubi's always hiring. If you have your ticket, if you're an apprentice, if you're an office manager, if you work in sales, check out the careers link at kubienergy.ca. They're hiring for their locations in Kamloops, Lethbridge. Shout out to Lethbridge. Calgary and Edmonton. kubienergy.ca. So yeah, widely expected Thursday that the United Conservatives will open the door to political parties at a municipal level. This is not something that the Premier campaigned on. We're hearing different opinions on it. I'm curious to know what yours is. You currently are working in and overseeing a so-called nonpartisan council that was elected that way, same as every other municipality in Alberta, but it sounds like that's about to change.
The Premier did speak at Alberta Municipalities Spring Caucus and indicate that it primarily might be Edmonton and Calgary to start. One of my colleagues, our Intergovernmental Affairs Director for the City of Grand Prairie, Rory Tarrant, shot me a paper that he wrote, a mini thesis on, you know, political parties in government. And it was interesting. I was reading it the other day, and there's history that shows that it can be successful. You know, it can bring a broader range of candidates because parties will go out and recruit people and want to have a diverse say. It shows that historically there's better.
Hang on. You don't think they're going to have a more diverse say under a party platform?
Well,
no way.
Here's the thing. So if you live in a primarily conservative area, they're voting based on name recognition.
Okay.
And whereas if you're building a team, you want to build a team that's diverse. And so if you're a party building a team, there's better odds that you're building a diverse team rather than people just going voting on name recognition, which primarily could be heavy male, right?
Yeah.
So a party could have a more diverse team. It could also have more engagement with voters, which could mean higher voter turnouts, which, you know, because you now have a party directly calling people that potentially support that party, and each party has their voter list, let's call them. So you could have higher engagement rather than people just voting on name recognition. And so I think that the other piece is that there's potentially more follow-up, more engagement after the election, because now the followers or the base of those that were elected are engaged residents. And so there is, historically, it's, you know, Quebec and Vancouver, and I don't think that you're going to see this in the small municipalities right away, but you're probably going to see it in Edmonton and Calgary.
How would you describe the makeup of your council?
Right.
I'm curious to see how you answer it.
Very diverse.
Yeah?
Yeah. I don't think that's always the way across Alberta. I have, you know, I have a 72-year-old retired carpenter. I have the first Métis elected in Grand Prairie. I'm the first female ever elected to mayor in Grand Prairie. We have 3 females of 9, and last term we only had 2, so we've increased our female. I think we're pretty diverse. However, our region is primarily a conservative region, so I would say my council is right of center.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, I think like one of the sort of things to me that seemed to be quite obvious. I'm just calling up a picture here on my laptop of your council. Just a good looking crew there, man.
Thanks.
Just a bunch of, look at that, those public servants that deserve a shout out. But if you were to ask the average person, how would they characterize Edmonton's council? Or Calgary's council, I think to a lesser degree in Calgary, because there are some pretty outspoken so-called conservative councillors down in Calgary. There's a couple in Edmonton, but for the most part, Edmonton's council is kind of seen as like left.
100%.
And the provincial government's seen as right. And so, they don't get along. And, the casual political watcher will say, well, we understand exactly what the province is up to here. They want to make sure that there's a more conservative government at the municipal level in cities like Edmonton. Do you think it's that simple?
Well, in reality, Alberta's successful when all the sort of cogs in the wheel are operating well. And so when you have municipalities that may be in opposition to priorities of the elected provincial government, is that efficient?
Elected
probably
municipalities,
not.
Though, too.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think the reality is that Alberta is successful when everybody's working together. And right now, the mid-sized cities are supportive and working with the province. Don't always agree on everything. There's a difference there, right? So working with and agreeing on everything are 2 different things. There seems to be some defiant positions coming out of the big cities. I don't know if you've noticed Mayor Sohi's social media lately. It's pretty aggressive, and it's very in opposition to the province. Do you think that's helping Edmonton?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not here to speak on behalf of the mayor, but, I will, I've noticed probably... some of what you're talking about. I know that he's choked. I don't speak for the mayor, but he appears to be choked about back taxes that he says that the city is owed. I think he's had $60 million from the province. I think that a lot of the municipalities feel like they've got their backs against the wall right now because they're not getting the money they need. They feel like the relationship between the province and those municipalities is a hostile one. Quite frankly, I think they feel like they're getting screwed.
But the reality is money doesn't fix everything. And I think that that's something that's really important. In my opinion, not every municipality just simply needs more money. More money isn't the solution. So better partnerships, finding efficiencies. I think that there's a way that a provincial and federal government can support municipalities without always handing over money. The other thing is, why would we give more money to municipalities that aren't being successful? There needs to be consideration for funding municipalities that are doing a good job and not just blanket across. And I mean, growth obviously is a factor in that. And the rural, my rural friends will tell you, roads and bridges are their number one expense, and I get that. But just funding more money for the sake of funding more money isn't a good solution.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you to a certain degree. I mean, it's probably like we should like pick a specific situation.
Or let's grade municipalities like they do post-secondaries.
Who would do the grading?
The provincial government, just like the provincial government. But an audit can be done third party.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at your debt capacity, you look at your spending, you look at, how you're negotiating your union contracts, you look at all of that, right? And so if you're progressive and proactive in negotiating your union contracts, that can be a significant savings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that Edmonton is struggling right now. I think
100%.
It's got some huge challenges in front of it. It sounds to me like you kind of think that the province should be calling the shots for all 3 levels of government.
Yeah, no,
like
I think that partnerships
should be
are the
on
biggest
board.
Piece.
You think that the feds should listen to the province, right? I mean, it sounds to me like you feel like all politics
should
run through
the legislature. No, I think that politics should stay in their lanes, right? And one of your callers talked about this this week. And, you know, I think that staying in your lane is a priority. Municipalities have a significant level and load of service levels that they provide. Province does as well, and so does the federal government. So I think that, you know, partnerships between all level of governments are important, but staying in your lane, it's not right that municipalities have to pay more in a healthcare and attraction. It's not fair that housing gets downloaded on municipalities. It's not realistic that municipalities are responsible for so many more provincial sort of jurisdictions. But that's the reality of it. If I want to create a safer community, I got to put more money into policing. If I want to get people off the streets, I got to put more money in housing. Those aren't my mandates.
Yeah. So, okay, you say, you know, not everything is fixed with money. I think on a personal level, people that are talking about their household budgets will 100% agree with you. Not everything gets fixed with money all the time. What's something that Grand Prairie has fixed or is addressing and trying to fix without just dumping more cash on it?
Well, I'd say the GPPS. I mean, that's to find efficiencies and create a safer community.
But you wouldn't be able to do that without a cash infusion from the province.
Sure. Yeah, it would have taken longer, for sure. Yeah.
What you talk about your different approaches to housing and homelessness and mental health, for that matter. Grand Prairie was clearing encampments before Edmonton ever started, right?
Yep.
Is my calendar 100% correct on that?
And so for probably about 3 years ago, we moved all encampments to an area adjacent to City Hall. And so that the intent of that was to get the systems in place. And the encampments can be dismantled. You give an individual 24 hours notice that if we come back and your encampment's here, that it's going to be dismantled. The process typically never happens. We haven't had to. It's a handful of encampments that actually had to get dismantled because it was handled properly in the sense of, if we come back, your personal belongings will be available at the RCMP. You could say that the individual's not going to go to the RCMP and get their belongings. They don't want to be in the detachment getting their belongings.
Sure.
But we had spaces, and that's a big thing. The provincial government stepped in to support Edmonton and show that there was enough spaces. But we approached it a little bit differently in regards to having a full array of opportunities for individuals that require support and different levels of support. Last week was the official opening of a facility called Cedar Point. It's a former hotel that the municipality bought, now being operated by Mustard Seed. One side of the building has 63 B3 units, which is a dry facility. There's a bag check every time you go in, supported by HS. Residents have high acuity. On the other side, in the former traditional hotel rooms, first two floors are municipal staff. So peace officers, housing, enforcement, community social development, and on the third floor is transition housing. So that's one piece. We have an organization called Rising Above.
So do you have to be sober to be in the entire facility?
No, on the one side.
Just so I'm clear. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, and not sober. You just can't bring stuff in.
I see.
Right. And so, and then Rising Above has a faith-based treatment program. We have Wapiti Dorm, which would be a shelter. Our Rotary Club put $1 million towards a day warming shelter. We had private industry buy a former apartment, convert it to a subsidized low-income supportive housing project. So really, when the province adds their 75-bed treatment center, which will be similar to the Red Deer one, we'll have something for everyone. And this is, we're out in front of it. We had approximately 300 homeless people. And so when you look at those numbers in correlation to Edmonton, we actually probably have more homeless per capita based on the population.
I think Edmonton's homeless population is estimated around 5,000, isn't it?
6,000, I think. 6, and so when you looked at, there are over 1 million people and we're 70, you know, at 300, it's at our point in time count was fairly high. Knowing that we recently got 90 people off the street, you know, we're getting there. And so it's slow, but we at least have a plan.
Was there ever supervised consumption services?
We have one of the supervised. It's adjacent to City Hall.
Do you support that?
Personally, no. I think that supervised consumption is keeping people on a hamster wheel until they OD.
Well, it's keeping them alive after they OD. I'd say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Here's, you know, my take on this is I try to put my cards on the table all the time. I think you've got to be foolish to criticize recovery programs.
Right.
Like, I think that's important. Like,
100%.
Obviously important.
People all agree recovery and treatment should be the priority.
So there's no criticism in my mind for recovery programs. I think they're incredibly important. I think they should be well-funded. I think they should be available. I think that when someone's ready to enter a program like that, they need to be able to get in right now because we know what happens. You know, somebody, we heard these amazing stories, not amazing, striking stories after I hosted the Chancellor's Forum for Chancellor Garrity at the University of Alberta. And we brought in a panel here, people can find it in our archives, to talk about this, talk about harm reduction. And they were talking about the experts on incarceration and some of the rates on, you know, people that spend time behind bars, so to speak. And they'll come out and they'll say their number one priority, typically, not everyone, but a lot of people will say my number one priority when I'm in jail is to get clean. Yep. And to get sober.
Yeah.
But as soon as you're released, if you don't have those support services, like right now, who can blame someone that has struggled with addiction their entire life, that has solved every problem
100%
in their time, you know, in custody, you know, who could blame someone for sort of like falling back into it? So I do think that's important. But I also acknowledge that evidence shows that harm reduction works in keeping people alive. And I get the hamster wheel argument, right? That's the same argument we hear for safe supply.
Yeah.
You know, people will say, well, what's the sense of giving people free drugs and, like, you know, letting them shoot up, you know, illegal drugs and whatever. I mean, the point in my mind is human dignity. People are going to be doing drugs regardless. They always have. They always will. I'm not talking about people who use drugs. I'm talking about human beings, generally speaking. The war on drugs, big picture, has been a failure. And I think that it's more the mark of a civilized society to have supervised spaces staffed by healthcare workers operating with empathy and evidence to ensure that if people do experience a drug poisoning, that they make it out alive and see the next day.
Yeah,
so that's kind of where my
safe
opinion
consumption
comes
sites,
from.
You know, they are keeping users off the street. So in my downtown core, somebody might be injecting in that trailer as opposed to behind a business. Sure, I see your point on that. But studies are coming back on safe supply showing it's not necessarily working. And I think the reality is the recovery-oriented treatment programs where the Red Deer facility and 75 people are being treated over a 9 to 12 month period and then transitioned into a program of support, that's a recovery oriented system. Keeping somebody, finding them a place to inject that's not behind a business, sure, that's a bonus. It's not treating people.
How much of your opinion on stuff like this do you think comes from what you're hearing from your constituents, like from what you're hearing from Grand Prairie residents?
And well, I'm a business owner downtown, and the reality is I want a safe environment for my staff to go to work. I want a safe environment for my kids to be able to walk through parks. And the reality is if we don't provide recovery-oriented treatment, we're not going to treat people. And so we treat them 75 people at a time in centers such as those recovery treatment centers.
What does life look like if you're living in Grand Prairie and you're about to have a baby, or you need your hip replaced, or you need cancer treatments?
We're very fortunate that we have the regional healthcare facility. It's the largest cancer ward north of Edmonton. It has 11 ORs. It's a significant recruiting tool. That brand new facility opened about 2 years ago. We're a very young population, probably the youngest population over 25,000 people in all of Canada.
Really?
Average age. Oh yeah. Our average age currently is 34. It was 31. And I think it's only 34 because seniors are sticking around longer to hang out with their grandkids. And also we've added more pickleball courts. So, I mean, seniors are sticking around longer. But I think really we're a very young community, young families. 10% of our population is under the age of 5. And so
why do you think that is? Like,
jobs.
Jobs and affordable housing?
100%. Single family housing prices are slightly above the provincial average, so in that $320,000 range. It's affordable to live. Don't get me wrong, utilities such as natural gas are through the roof, 3 times of what you're going to pay at your house in rural areas such as Grand Prairie. And so.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Like the transmission fees in the average house in Edmonton would be about $370 annually. The average house in my region is $1,200.
And what can you do about that?
Well, we advocate regularly about having a more equitable program. Both RMA and AB Munis, 88% of the municipalities supported our resolution. We're working with the province and ATCO, who is our service provider, to sort of look at that. In Saskatchewan, they have 2 plans, a rural and an urban plan. In BC, it's completely equalized. Everybody pays across the province equally. And when you look that the resources are coming from my backyard to heat your home, and then you pay, you know, a third of what I pay, doesn't make sense.
Yeah, well, I've always felt that way, but that Albertans should pay half for
right.
For
if
gas.
Every house in Edmonton and Calgary were to pay $7 more per month, right? $7 a month, the entire province would be equalized. And we're not even advocating for equalization. We just need to be the numbers to be a little closer. Hmm. We know it costs more to live in the north. It's a reality. But it doesn't have to be that much different.
I mean, when I'm, yeah, and living in the north, and then we think of, like, you know,
high
people that are
or,
up in or even further in, like, you know, Nunavut or wherever, and we see some of the, I mean, in particularly, I think, Indigenous or First Nations communities, it seems like you see it a couple of times on Twitter every year where someone will post a photo of, like, orange juice that's, you know, I'm thinking of Bevo. I was going to say $16. I have it, like, burned into my brain, 16. But you know what I'm saying? You know, like, flour will be, like, $11. There's, like, these wild prices on chicken breast or stuff like that. Cost of living across the board in Grand Prairie, is it, like, when you look at inflation and grocery costs and those types of things, aside from maybe the natural gas rate that you mentioned there, is it pretty much the same as the bigger cities?
At the pumps, you might see a couple cents difference, and that's transportation, etc. But houses are cheaper, obviously, in the north, in Edmonton and Calgary, and we're slightly above the provincial average. Lots of opportunities, but right now we have almost 0% vacancy on rentals. And so single family housing prices are low. And so it's a great opportunity for growth.
What you're going to be, are you speaking at the Canadian, Edmonton's welcoming like 7,000 people for this Canadian Hydrogen Convention.
Not speaking there, no.
You're just showing up?
We have a regional booth. So the County of Grand Prairie, the MD of Greenview, and the City of Grand Prairie, we like to do a collaborative approach in regards to our ECDEV. So get the word out there and really just have that booth there.
Okay, I think of your colleague, Mayor Nachu in Sturgeon County, has been like talking, she's been in my ear about hydrogen for like 100%. Years. She's very bullish on hydrogen. What implications does hydrogen have, or how does that relate to when I think of Fort McMurray? Or pardon, whoa.
Well, let me
say myself. When I think of Fort McMurray, I think of the oil sands. When I think of your city,
natural gas,
Grand Prairie, I think of natural gas.
100%.
So, but hydrogen. When you mentioned to me you were coming to Edmonton for the hydrogen convention, I went, okay. So, what's the context?
Well, obviously, having that large natural gas play, right? Yeah. One of the largest in North America, the supply comes from there, and you see a lot of the heartland is fueled, for lack of a better term, from gas that's taken from our backyard.
Yeah, this so-called blue hydrogen.
100%.
So when you look at the future of Grand Prairie, this is a big significant... 100%.
We wrote a letter to the Premier asking for consideration of our region to be the next pilot project. You could look at examples where maybe municipal vehicles are fueled through hydrogen. You know, let's look at, I know EIA is doing a lot of work in cars, and I think Myron said there's 9 cars right now in Edmonton between the airport and the provincial government. Well, maybe our region is a pilot project for light-duty trucks. We have the natural gas right there. You can convert it to hydrogen and fuel those trucks, and you can have a great sample base of municipal vehicles in an area that, you know, they do decent amount of travel every day in a slightly colder zone. So, you know, we want to be part of that hydrogen solution and equation as well.
Huh. What's another thing that you're going to be talking about? I mean, I know you're going to be at the chamber today. You're going to be talking to those members and obviously a lot of people that are making big business decisions. We've already covered the airport. We've covered hydrogen. What's one other thing that you want on people's radar before I know you got a lot to do today. When people think of Grand Prairie, what's one other thing that you want them thinking about? What's maybe an underreported or undercovered story that's maybe not getting the attention, the publicity, or the conversation that you think it deserves?
Well, I think it's really interesting to talk about the Premier's fixation on Red Deer. I think this really...
Oh, the next city of a million.
Yeah. So I think it's really important to consider that Lethbridge, Medicine Hat, Grand Prairie, Fort McMurray, those hubs need to be successful in order for Alberta to be successful. And so those regional hubs play a big piece of the province. You saw Markusoff's article about the reality of Red Deer being the next million people.
Jason Markusoff.
Right. It's not realistic. And so, you know, if you were to take a GIS map and look at the growth of Red Deer, how much it would be integrated, that would become a GTA. And I don't know if that's the Premier's intent. I know the Premier supports rural hubs such as Grand Prairie and Fort McMurray and Lethbridge. And so having all corners of the province be successful makes a stronger Alberta. We need to use the resources where they're based and natural growth. So support areas of natural growth makes a heck of a lot more sense, in my opinion.
Yeah, so you're basically concerned that, I mean, Red Deer and Grand Prairie, not very far off in population,
nope.
right? Within
nope.
probably, what, 5,000, 10,000
people? No, within
people?
10,
yeah, within 10,000 yeah, people. 10, 15, so you yeah. consider yourself to be like right there.
Lethbridge and Red Deer are closer, and we're, you know, we would be the sixth largest city
okay.
in Alberta. So, but that's so fluctuation. That doesn't include shadow population, and depends which census you're looking at. Red Deer and Lethbridge are bigger, don't get me wrong. But I think that Red Deer is the center of Edmonton and Calgary. It's not the center of the province. And the hubs, the regional hubs across the province need to be successful in order for Alberta to be successful. And that's not a slam at Red Deer. Red Deer is a great municipality.
Red Deer's
you
great.
Know, you know, it's a great municipality. But we have natural resources across the province and natural growth. And so Red Deer will grow on its natural growth rates to see a strong province. I think the province needs to continue to support regional hubs.
Yeah, I'm reading Marcus Hubb's piece literally live as we speak because I only read the headline. I was like, Daniel Smith, and no offense, like I lived in Red Deer. I met my wife in Red yeah. Deer. Like my career started in Red yeah. Deer. I love Red Deer. No offense, Red Deer. If you live in Red Deer, all you hear is no offense, Red Deer. And then people start, I know how that goes.
Yeah.
But I just sort of laughed when I saw it, like Premier envisions, you know, Red Deer is the next city of a million. And I go, okay, like if Red Deer was going to be the next city of a million, it would be at 400,000 now.
Right.
It would be at 600,000 now in 3 years. And I just don't think, so I don't quite understand it. I haven't paid much attention to it. I can understand why this would be of concern to you because
right.
the obsession becomes, you know, we're going to do everything we can to start getting big suburban neighborhoods there. We're
yeah.
going to run rail, more rail through there, high speed rail between maybe Calgary and Edmonton. Who knows? I'm just dreaming big. Maybe a couple more hospitals. Red Deer Regional has been bursting at the seams. I can't
yeah.
say I'm too familiar with it in this year, but I know in past. So yeah, I'm curious to know like ultimately what is the motivation.
Well, the difference is areas like ourselves, and I can't speak for Fort McMurray or Lethbridge, but in my area, we're ready for growth. We've gone through those booms that other municipalities such as Airdrie, et cetera, are experiencing now. We've done that before, and so now we're focusing on a strategic growth. But our region servicing 300,000 people is ready for the next piece. We are, you know, on the Canamex corridor. We have significant agricultural land. We have the National Bee Diagnostic Center that's looking at the future of growth in agriculture. And so that agribusiness, forestry, petrochemical piece is where our growth will be. Not to mention, we have the largest single natural gas play in North America.
Has that Alberta is Calling campaign, has it helped you or hurt you?
Oh, 100% it helps.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you hear a lot of municipalities, especially the bigger ones, are saying, yeah. no one denies it is an effective campaign.
Right.
I heard some crazy number about the number of people that move to Edmonton or the number of people that move to Alberta every day, and it'll
yeah.
knock your socks off. I think it's like 130 people a day
yeah, we'll
move to Edmonton.
Get to 5 million by the end of the year.
No kidding, right?
Right?
So, I mean, it's working.
Yeah.
The concern municipalities have is that it's a provincial campaign. It's a national audience, but the costs fall
well,
into
the first,
municipalities.
The first sort of automatic reaction is for people to look at the large cities. The distribution needs to be across the province.
That's why I want
to
pick
people,
your brain,
right?
About it.
And so when we look at people migrating to Alberta, it can't be just to the big centers, and that's not realistic. It has to be distributed across the province, and the province can play a hand in that. And even now, their next iteration of Alberta's calling will be more focused on trades, etc. And even in the rural renewal stream, which is my community was the largest community and the second community in Alberta to take part of that. And so really that's fast-tracking immigrants that are looking to come to Canada and fast-tracking them so that they can get jobs in our region, get set up. And I think that implementing that piece where growth is strategic is really important. That being said, right now I'm at about 0% occupancy for rentals. So not receiving the rapid housing dollars that we applied to the federal government for puts a damper on that. And so
you told the province about this? If the province is supposed to fix everything and fund the conservative
province
areas.
Is well aware of that concern. And it's situations like that that I think lead to Bill 18. When you see municipalities that are mid-sized cities not getting funding, the province wants the mid-sized cities to grow. And when they don't get federal support, that's one of the reasons the provincial government wants to step in
so
to make
rent,
sure that growth is distributed equally.
Are rents out of control in GP right now?
They're not out of control. They're still significantly lower than other, you know, hubs, but they're increasing for sure.
Yeah. I told you I was going to ask about this because
yeah.
I read this and I went, come on, Mayor. Yeah. You, I think it was back in January, did an interview with a local journalist in Grand Prairie. You said that I think that 15-minute cities, I should have led with this so we get,
sure.
a million views.
Yeah.
I think that 15-minute cities, you said, continue to be a concern in many communities across North America. What people are concerned about is that oversight. People feel they want to know that municipalities and governments aren't tracking them. They're not getting unnecessary information. You said the city of GP takes pride in the fact that most Grand Prairie residents can get around the city in 15 minutes or less, but you say council's not interested in the traditional idea of becoming an official 15-minute city.
Yeah, and so the traditional idea being a land use opportunity, right?
Yeah.
So in land use planning, 15-minute cities are something that could be explored. My council isn't exploring that. We are a true 15-minute city in the sense that you can get anywhere in 15 minutes.
But I feel like that's all you have to say.
Yeah,
you just say 100%. This is it in practice. It's working. It is a 15-minute
100%.
City.
So unfortunately, people, as soon as you say that 15-minute city word, they go to the far extremes, and then that's not the conversation.
Yeah.
At one point, our economic development team had a 15-minute to anywhere campaign because we are 15
so
minutes.
So you are a 15-minute right. city. You should be endorsing 15-minute cities.
Yeah, but I'm not. Our council is not endorsing where you're going to have areas of 15-minute cities where you're told where you shop,
Nobody
where you...
Nobody thinks that. Nobody's there, doing
oh,
that.
Oh, there's people that think that.
Well, there's people that think that.
Yeah.
Because you say... Not because I'm not pointing my finger, but yeah. I guess I am. But you're saying people are concerned about oversight.
Yeah.
You want to know governments aren't tracking them. That's 100%. Not what this is. That's not what this is about.
For some people, that's what this is about.
The conspiracy theorists 100%. Think it's like there's going to be digital banking and the government's going to control your money.
That's
there's gonna
for
be,
some people
there's
what it's about.
There's going to be fences
and you
can't go to your favorite grocery store. But you know as well as I do, that is
that's not realistic.
What this is about.
Not realistic.
Yeah.
100%.
Okay. So Grand Prairie is a 15-minute city.
Sure.
Why? You should do a new sign outside.
Alberta's first 15-minute city.
Welcome to Grand Prairie. Alberta's first 15-minute
yeah.
city.
I no.
If you put
no.
the sign up, we'll pay for it.
No.
No?
No?
Okay. Oh, I have fun talking to you.
Me too.
Thanks for making time for us.
Absolutely, anytime.
When I heard you were coming here and I thought we could put a round table together, and then I thought, no, I think I just want Mayor Clayton one-on-one.
I have one thing I want to correct myself on. Peace officers, not traditional guns, tasers. So they carry tasers, but not guns.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
like
people
that...
may see, when they see them, assume that it's a gun, but it's a taser.
Yeah. I don't know enough about it to comment.
Yeah.
You know, I just... I have all kinds of thoughts on how we respond, but I'm just a civilian, so I try to save them, right?
Yeah.
Because I know that, like, some people will say, you know, for example, like when there's, you know, we know that our police officers, and for that matter, firefighters, in a lot of cases are responding to incidents where mental health supports are imperative and where it is truly a mental health scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you do need law enforcement 100%. Like I'm not naive. If there's a weapon involved or someone's safety is involved or there's like a hostage situation or something like that. In other situations, you know, we're asking our police officers to double as mental health crisis counselors, and that's not necessarily their training.
Well, and that's something that, you know, that we did a little bit differently as well. We implemented a mobile outreach team, and so they are in a transit van. If you're a business owner or a homeowner and you see somebody that has high needs or is in distress and needs support, you call the mobile outreach team. You don't call 911. The mobile outreach team is there typically within 5 to 6 minutes.
Yeah.
They work from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m., 7 days a week, and they have that mental health training that in turn they can recognize potentially the individual, they can recognize whether or not 911 needs to be called. And having that part of the integrated service delivery in regards to public safety has been very successful. We also implemented a public security unit, and they were more focused on the hot spots, and they were 24 hours a day. So if there was an area of activity that was continually coming up on the radar, we were sending the public security unit there. And so those integration of pieces are, you know, part of what's going to make us successful. I think that you're exactly right. And that's another reason when you look at GPPS, they will be trained in some of those mental health requirements. It's, you know, you don't see that as often in current training with the RCMP. And so we implemented that mobile outreach team. Our caseworkers are active on the street, working with mobile outreach, working with public safety, peace officers, working with the RCMP. And so that integrated approach is something that we are very optimistic will be successful.
Let me ask you this before we go. Here's one from Dwayne in the live chat. He wonders what Mayor Clayton thinks will happen to properly address the wildfire situation this spring. Your municipality impacted by it just like everybody else's, whether that's air quality or whether it's geographically.
Well, last year we housed 1,500 people from Yellowknife, similar numbers to what Edmonton housed. We also supported our municipal neighbors. The County of Grand Prairie had one of the early fires in May last year. Our team supported them. And right now in our municipality, we are fire smarting. We're doing a joint campaign with the county to remind people how to fire smart. It's going to be a dry summer. And people, I don't know if you noticed the other day in BC, I read an article, 7 people had started fires in one day. 7 man-made, fires, significant fires as a result of human error. Mm. So on a daily basis, people can be responsible and have an impact in not starting fires. So, not burning your yard waste in an open fire. And we're already on fire ban. Most municipalities are. And I think that it's being responsible. There's fires that are going to happen naturally, and significant fires happen. My municipal colleague, Mayor McAteer in High Level, was impacted, and she already has a fire. There's fires that are still going from last year. And so fire is realistic, and it's a reality for municipalities to be facing. And it's something of great concern.
I usually check on fire bans right leading up to May long weekend. That's kind of the first time that I'm ever heading out, but I'm just checking out right now, albertafirebans.ca. I had no idea. Look at this map. I mean, for people listening on the podcast, it's basically...
It looks like July, and it's
looks
April.
Like July. It's like the entire... I mean, it almost looks like the entire province is under fire ban right now. Yeah. Not technically, but you can always check out albertafirebans.ca.
Well, and it's reminding people not to have fires when, it's over 12 kilometers an hour in wind. And it just, all those pieces matter. We need to be smart. Mm.
That's Grand Prairie's Mayor Jackie Clayton hanging out with us for an hour ahead of a big, busy day in Alberta's capital city here in Edmonton. Welcome to town and welcome to the studio. It's nice to have you here. Thanks for having me. Shining some
it's
light on what's driving
chat.
Some of the decisions. I know a lot of people are paying attention or will be paying attention to the Grand Prairie Police Service for sure, as well as a lot of other stuff we covered. So thanks for your availability.
Appreciate it. Have a good day.
You bet. You can hang tight here for a sec, Mayor. We're just going to wrap, let our Real Talkers know in 60 seconds what's coming up tomorrow. You're not going to want to miss this. This is really an incredible opportunity to speak with somebody that's just returned from a war zone. But first, I want to remind you that these conversations are happening with the support of amazing Real Talk partners like our friends at California Closets, Custom Closets, and Storage Solutions for the entire home. Johnny, I don't know if you saw the California Closets ad during the Stanley Cup playoffs last night.
I see it every night on Hockey Night in Canada.
They got Stu. They got Stuart Skinner. He's got his new California Closet. Mm-hmm. I like that. They did a nice job with that. I mean, hey, if the Oilers goalie is trusting California Closets with his organization, why wouldn't you? They can come up with customized solutions for the entire home on any budget. Might be your laundry room. Might be your guest room, doubling as your home office. It might be your garage. Whatever it is, California Closets' talented teams of designers and installers can turn that into a reality. And it all starts with a free consultation. That gets started when you visit californiaclosets.ca. And I wanted to read this note from a Real Talker. I haven't asked permission yet to read this from the team, but I got a message from a Real Talker by the name of Neil, who is in touch with me, and he told me that he did some work with Complete Care Restoration. They had something break down, and he had heard about Complete Care Restoration on the show, and he basically said, I wanted to reiterate to you guys how what you said Complete Care Restoration would bring to the table, how that played out in real life. Neil visited CompleteCareRestoration.ca. It was something to do with their AC unit and created a real problem in the business. He says, Kelly was on site before we thought he would be, right away, basically. This team ready to respond 24/7. He says he immediately put our minds at ease. He let us know that the problem was something that they've seen before, something they could handle. Said they let us know, they assured us they could get us back on our feet. Before we knew it, we were. Neil wrote in and said, I thought you might want to hear that from a Real Talker who took you up on your offer to get in touch with Complete Care Restoration when disaster strikes. Neil, thanks for that. And it's a good feeling to know that Neil's experience was the same as ours when they came in here and built this studio for us. They did just a magnificent job. We give them 2 thumbs up. That's Complete Care Restoration. Coming up on Wednesday's episode, want to let you know, she is just back from Gaza. She's a Canadian. She's not a journalist. As a matter of fact, she's been a foreign aid worker for many years. Doctors Without Borders. And in her time in Gaza and in Israel, Claire Porter Robbins has built an entire network. People she's worked with, colleagues, civilians, friends. She's been writing for The New Yorker about her experiences on the very personal level. And on Wednesday's Real Talk, an exclusive opportunity to sit down with Claire one-on-one. It's an episode you won't want to miss. We'll see you then.
Real Talk is hosted by Ryan Jesperson. Executive producer, Josh Dunford. Technical producer, John Hicks. General manager, Katie Cook-Chivers. Account coordinator, Lawrence Derlego. Human resources, Lena Shepherd. Website design, Mike Johnston. Voiceover by me, Carrie Skelton. Real Talk's editorial board is Supriya Duvetti, Ahmed Ali, Brandy Morin, Ann Castleman, Corey Hogan, Harmon Candola, Catherine O'Neill, and Chris Henderson. Member Emerita, Julie Rohr. Real Talk is recorded in Edmonton, Alberta, on Treaty 6 territory, the traditional and ancestral territory of the Cree, Dene, Blackfoot, Soto, and Nakota Sioux, home to the Métis settlements and the Métis Nation of Alberta. Real Talk is a Relay project. For more, check out ryanjesperson.com.